Hello, everyone, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. Happy New Year to everybody. It's a beautiful, beautiful 2016, and I'm really so happy to be here with all of you. I have a great show planned for today. My guest will be Joel Berg. He is a nationally recognized leader and media spokesperson in the field of domestic hunger, food insecurity, obesity, and poverty, and he is the executive director of the New York City Coalition Against Hunger. I first met him at TEDx Manhattan last year. He gave a wonderful talk, and I just knew, you know, this is a issue that needs to be in the forefront of everybody's mind so that we can correct it. And I knew that I wanted to bring him on my show. And so today's the day, so I'm really happy that he will be joining us. But first, I want to share some things going on in and around the city with you, share a great recipe that I made on Christmas Eve day, and talk to you about some things in the news. First, I just read a great article. I was so happy to see it actually in the Science Times, not just in the food section, about Family Food Productions. Family Food Productions, Lynn Fredericks was a guest on my show years ago, and it's really wonderful to see that that her organization is doing so well. But she's really bringing food into schools and teaching young people how to cook, and she's coordinated with curriculum. It's stuff that I did when I was at the Waldorf School and stuff that I would love to do more of, but teaching kids how to cook and loving food and understanding where their food comes from and understanding good health and weaving it in with curriculum, it's just a no-brainer. You know, it expands the classroom beyond the walls of the classroom. You can get into mathematics, you know, when you're dividing up portion control or when you're multiplying a recipe. You can talk about cultures, and you can explore different food cultures and why different foods are eaten in different parts of the world. And, you know, it's just really wonderful. And this article also talks about how it's just ridiculous, these kid menus that they put in restaurants, and how we're encouraged to give our kids a hamburger or a hot dog or macaroni and cheese instead of really good, nutritious food. Why not just make a half portion of, a stir fry or something like that? Anyway, it's a great article. I have a link to it on my website, and I really recommend everyone reading it. It's just inspirational, and if we can bring more of these programs into schools, we would be really addressing the obesity rate, the hunger rate. We'd be addressing a lot of issues just by bringing food, good food, real food, into the schools and teaching it. And, you know, I also talk, when I do cooking demos for PTAs, I always talk about family time in the kitchen. And where so many parents come home after, you know, both parents work, mom comes home, or single-parent family as well, mom comes home and has to get dinner on the table, very often the TV goes on and the kids watch TV just to get a break while mom puts dinner on the table. Well, we're trying to turn this all around and bring the kids into the kitchen, make them a participant, and make that a special family time. Kids can do so much in the kitchen. They can be so helpful, not just setting the table and peeling the carrots, but they can really cook. You can bring a chair up to the stove. They can cook. There's really nice knives out there that are child safe, and, you know, but at the same time, you teach respect to a child about a knife and the dangers of knife and good handling, and they can do it. Of course, age appropriate, you know, they gradually work into more higher level skills, but you still can do so much with kids, even little kids. They love to stir, and how many things need to just be stirred on the stove while you're chopping something else? So really think about bringing your kids in the kitchen and making dinner time a really special time, whether you have flowers on the table, candlelight, lower the lights, no cell phones at the table, no computers, no TVs. Really just unplug, sit down, and talk about your day. And you'll see it really can revolutionize your relationship with your kids. So I hope many of you take that up if you're not already doing it. Great things going on in the city. Let's see. slow food always talks about the arc of taste, and that's about preserving historical foods and traditional foods. And there's now a Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn, and they are celebrating flavors intact, New York's arc of taste. And that's going to be tonight, actually, January 7th. At 6:30 at the Museum of Food and Drink. I have yet to go to that museum, and I would love to, so although I won't be making it tonight. But if any of you are around and can make it, it's supposed to be a great museum, and I know Slow Food's Arc of Taste is really wonderful. So this is celebrating New York's Arc of Taste. January 16th is Divine Dining. A dear friend of mine, Kathy Epstein, is running this course at Absolute Yoga in Woodbury. It's to transform your eating habits using ancient techniques and learn how to approach mealtime in a mindful way. And it's being organized by Living Lotus Group. It's $40 from 2 to 4 on January 16th. January 18th through February 5th is New York City Restaurant Week, and this is a great time to try some of those restaurants that normally might be a little bit out of your price range. It's a great, great time. So you can go on line to New York City Restaurant Week and see what restaurants are participating. January 22nd to the 24th is NOFA New York's Winter Conference. Always a great time to come out and meet farmers, producers, people that are in the food movement that care about food. I've met lots of great people at the Winter Conference, and I highly recommend it. The full conference is $270, but you can go for one day or 2 days. So go online, see the schedule, see what courses you're interested in. If you can't go the whole time, even just going for a day is really a wonderful thing. January 23rd is the Winter Bourbon Festival, and that's at TJ Finley's in Bay Shore. January 23rd to the 27th is the National Farmers Union 2016 Women's Conference. Now, that's in New Orleans, and that's going to be a fun event, bringing together all the women that are involved in agriculture. And amazingly, there's more young women farmers coming up through the ranks than there are men. So it should be really great. And if you are a woman out there doing farming or interested in agriculture, this might be a really wonderful opportunity to meet some other people and, of course, to see New Orleans. January 26th, Slow Food New York City is having their Manhattan Slur. And this is something that's free and open to everyone. Every month they do a slur. Sometimes it's in Brooklyn, sometimes it's in Manhattan, sometimes it's in both. Anyway, check out the Slow Food New York City website to find out. This one will be on January 26th at Wassail in Manhattan. So go onto their website and find out. Also, February 8th and 9th, there's a soil and nutrition conference up in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And this is being organized by the Knight Bio-Nutrient Food Association. I did a workshop with them. It was over a course of many months up at Stone Barns, and it was really wonderful. And I highly recommend the information that they share. So if you are available and interested, again, information is on my website. Let's see, February 13th is the Long Island Regional Seed Consortium Seed Swap, and that's a really great opportunity to get seeds and find out who's growing what, and if you live on Long Island, to actually get seeds from your local area. They always do better, so check that out. There's a local seafood summit, February 16th to 18th, and then in March is actually going to be a slow fish in New Orleans, March 10th through 13th. So there's a lot of awareness about the problems around the fishing that's happening these days. You know, they're just scooping up too much fish with very little consciousness of the sea life and the damage they're doing to the floor of the ocean. So both slow fish and also this local seafood summit would be a wonderful way to learn more about fish and get involved. March 3rd is the 7th Annual Good Spirits Celebration, and that's at La Venue in Manhattan from 6 to 9, and Edible Manhattan is the organizer of that. And then, of course, the Just Food Conference is coming up on March 13th, and that's at the Teachers College, Columbia University. also a wonderful thing. I have a lot more events on my website, so you should check that out. And what else? Okay, I want to share with you my recipe. This is a wonderful recipe. It's called spaghetti carbonara a la portobello mushrooms. And portobello carbonara is a dish that my husband loves, but as you know, it's made with bacon or pork, and it's not something that I do in my house. So I wanted to come up with something that would satisfy that for him. And this dish really did it. So portobello mushrooms are known to be very meaty, and they substitute a lot of times for burgers and things like that. So this is a wonderful recipe. I used whole wheat spaghetti. You can also use any gluten-free pasta that you would like if you'd like to do that. I used 2 medium organic onions, or you could use 1 large onion. I just didn't have one, so I used 2 medium-sized. 4 portobello mushrooms. You could probably even use 6. You know, the more mushrooms in my husband's eyes, the better. 1/2 cup plus or minus extra virgin olive oil. 1/4 teaspoon red pepper flakes. 1 cup grated Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. 10 cloves of garlic, finely chopped. 2 organic eggs. 2 teaspoons tamari. 1/4 cup fresh Italian parsley, chopped. Salt and pepper to taste. And then we actually drizzled truffle oil on at the end, and that was wonderful. So you're going to cook pots according to directions, leaving it a little firm, al dente. So go on the lighter side. And you want to time it so that the pasta comes out of the water when you're ready to mix it in with the eggs and the cheese so that the hot pasta will cook the egg. So if you're a little slower in the kitchen, know that, and just, you know, wait to put the pasta into the water until you have things really in order. Anyway, you're going to coat the bottom of a cast iron pan with olive oil. You're going to saute the onions for a few minutes. Then add the garlic and cook those until golden brown. Add the mushrooms and cook that for 5 to 7 minutes until they begin to crispen. And then I add the tamari, and that just sears the mushrooms on a high heat. I add the tamari so that the mushrooms get seared, and that really gives it that saltiness that pork or bacon would have. And you want to coat the mushrooms well with tamari. And so if you're a little slower, this would be a good time. Get to that point and then cook your pasta, okay, so that the pasta, while the pasta is cooking, you can mix the eggs and the cheese together in a separate bowl. You can add red pepper flakes to that if you'd like to add the red pepper flakes. I always like a little bit of spice, but that can be left out. So at this point, once you have the eggs beaten with the cheese, you can drain the pasta. Reserve 1 cup of the cooking water so that you can thin the sauce out a little bit. And then add the pasta to the pan and coat well with the mushrooms and onions. Remove the mushrooms and onions from the heat and add the egg and cheese mixture to that, tossing well to cook the egg on the hot pasta. So you don't want to eat raw egg, but you don't want the eggs to turn into scrambled eggs. So it's perfect, the perfect amount of heat from the pasta. But you just have to stir it and take it off the heat. But stir it well and get all the pasta coated with the sauce. Then add the parsley, toss again, and then you can add a few tablespoons of the cooking liquid until you get a desired consistency. My husband likes it really dry. That's how the carbonara was that he first fell in love with. So I didn't add too much. I used about 3 tablespoons, but if you end up using the whole 1/2 cup, that's okay too. Do it to how you like it. And then when I served it, I drizzled a little of the truffle oil on top and garnished it with some more fresh parsley and cheese. And I'm telling you, it was so good. So really, give it a try. And, of course, I love feedback, so let me know how it was. And now I'm hoping my guest is with us. My guest, as I said, is Joel Berg from the New York City Coalition Against Hunger. And the New York City Coalition Against Hunger is a wonderful organization that is really addressing hunger in New York. So I'm going to take a couple-minute break while I try to locate my guest, because he's not answering right now. So let's take a couple-minute break, and when I get back, I will either have my guest or we'll just talk about hunger on our own, okay? Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Well, my guest is missing in action, so I am going to just talk to you about some of the things that I wrote about this week on my newsletter, because they are all really, really important, and I would like all of you to know about them. If you don't get my newsletter, you can sign up for my newsletter at iegreen.com. And in the newsletter, every week I share with people ways that you can take action to get involved in our food movement, and in our food movement that involves also being involved in the environmental movement, because they are so interrelated. And that's, of course, those of you that know me, one of the reasons why I love being in the food movement so much, because it really connects all the things that I'm interested in, both food, environment, health, it's all connected. And so on my website, I'm asking people to sign a petition. One is to save our national forests from logging companies, which is, of course, a no-brainer. Trees, people don't realize when you cut down the trees sequester the CO2 into the soil and helps with climate change. And so it keeps the bad stuff in the ground and doesn't keep it in the atmosphere, and we need to allow forests to continue. We need to stop cutting down the rainforest, the Amazon, all of these trees being cut down on our planet is really exacerbating the global warming problem. And so we need to stop that from happening. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the international trade deal that is being negotiated, that Obama is really trying to push through, is really a bad thing for our country, and it's a bad thing for other countries too. It's being promoted as something that is good, and yet, as we saw from the trade deal that happened with Mexico, you know, corporations start going down there, jobs start going down there, and it's just not a good thing. And there's nothing, we don't have the quality control that we have here, and the quality control here is pretty bad, you know, with our gag laws and not being allowed to really go in and see what's going on in factory farms. Well, you can imagine it's even worse in some other countries. What this partnership also allows is it actually allows countries or corporations to sue countries for a loss of potential revenue, which is actually absurd. If a country says they don't want to import genetically modified foods, the corporation trying to sell the genetically modified foods can sue that country for potential loss of revenue. It's just completely an insane way of doing business. And, you know, we have to put people's livelihoods and people's health way above corporate profit. And just it just feels like corporate profit rules these days, and it's just absurd. So please learn about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Get yourself involved and do what you can to try to prevent this from becoming law. And then we also are asking people to support the Food Recovery Act. The Food Recovery Act, you know, recovers food that would otherwise go to waste. And food waste, as you know, I've talked about a lot. I've had guests on that have talked about it. Food waste is a huge problem, not just in this country, but worldwide. But in this country, the waste is not happening so much because of poor distribution. It's happening because of fruits or vegetables that come at, that are grown that don't look perfect. And as someone who grows my own fruits and vegetables, I know that, especially growing organic, my apples might have little brown spots on them, or they might be misshapen, not perfectly round. But I have to tell you, they are beautiful and delicious. My peaches, usually, you know, there's almost always a rot spot on my peaches, but the other, but three quarters of it is beautiful and delicious. So you cut out that little bruise, and then you have the most delicious peaches you're going to find, as opposed to the peaches, even organic peaches that, you know, I might buy at Whole Foods or another store, and they're mealy and they have no juice in them, and they're just not the way peaches are supposed to taste. So, you know, food recovery is really an important issue, and we're trying, this act is really giving financial support to organizations to donate, or companies to donate their leftover fruits and vegetables that otherwise would go to waste. So it incentivizes donating the food to food banks and food pantries where they can cook this into really delicious, delicious food. You know, not only is it getting wasted, but then when it goes into the landfills, you know, it produces methane gas, which is worse for the environment, and it's just, you know, a bad, vicious cycle. So if we support this Food Recovery Act, hopefully we can keep a lot of waste from happening. Also, great news, the Congress stalled the approving the genetically engineered salmon, which is huge. The thought of it just was freaking me out. I couldn't believe that, again, for profit, for the, you know, so that a corporation can make a lot of money, they were willing to take the risk of having us eat genetically modified salmon. You know, you don't know what or how that's going to affect the environment, how it's going to affect our bodies, and to allow that to be approved was just completely ridiculous. So I am just so happy to hear that it is not going to be approved, or at least it's been postponed for now. So we have to stay vigilant about it. We have to stay on top of it. We have to stay informed so that we can prevent that from happening. Okay, so now I would like to talk about, even though my guest Joel Berg, the executive director of the New York Coalition Against Hunger, is not able to be with us, I would like to talk about hunger in the U.S. and in New York. To me, it's just ridiculous that when we live in such a wealthy country that we could have so much poverty. In 2014, there were 46.7 million people, that's 15% of our country, were living in poverty. And 15 million of them, or 21% of children under the age of 18, are living in poverty. It's just inexcusable. you know, we have such a wealthy country. And, you know, I'm really happy to hear that the mayor of New York City is going to raise minimum wage to $15 an hour for all of New York City workers. But it's still not good enough. So, so I really it really troubles me. And as someone who works with a food pantry every year, for 21 years now, I've been feeding the hungry people in Jamaica, Queens, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter. And I see the same people year after year, and it's just a vicious cycle. And we really need to get to the root of this poverty. And I believe it's all about education. And the Riverfront Food Pantry, which is the food pantry that I work with, they see that as well as what they need to do to break the cycle. And they actually are supporting and getting financial aid for young men and women who are living in families that have been dependent on these food pantries. They are getting them into colleges and helping them get through colleges. You know, they create a place where they can come and study. People are around that help them. They give them jobs on the weekend and just help them break out of that pattern. And some of the young people that I've met, they are the first ones in their family ever to go to college. And it's just, you know, it's beautiful to see, really beautiful to see. And you know that that's going to be the difference. That's how it's going to change. We need to also really address a living wage, because right now we don't have that living wage. But I think my guest is actually calling in. So let's take another break for just a few minutes and see if I can get Joel on. Okay, don't go anywhere. Those of you listening, you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. I'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest has been found. I'm very happy to introduce to all of you Joel Berg, the Executive Director of the New York Coalition Against Hunger. Hi, Joel. Are you with me?
Yes, I am. Sorry about the confusion on that.
Great. Thank you. Better late than never, as they say.
Yes.
So anyway, I am thrilled to have you on. I told everybody that I had met you at TEDx Manhattan, and your presentation was great, and the work you're doing is so important, and I'm really passionate about people addressing hunger. I mean, it's just such an issue. So can you share with us why you think there's still so many hungry people in America?
Because our political system's broken. And thanks for having me on to discuss this vital topic. Politics has caused hunger, and it's politics that's going to be taken, better politics, to fix it. I know a lot of people think, oh, it's about lack of food. No, it's not. It's about lack of money to afford enough food. In America today, 48 million of our neighbors live in households that are too broke to afford the food. they need. And because we've slashed wages, outsourced jobs, and decimated the safety net, that's why so many people are hungry today, even though we almost ended it in the 70s.
Right, right. Yeah, it's crazy. And I guess I was sharing the statistics of 2014 of 46.7 million. So it's gone up now to 48 million. And it's just, yes, going in the wrong direction. But, you know, politicians always give us the impression that people are hungry because they're lazy and they don't want to work and they like getting government handouts. Can you shed some light on that? Because I don't believe that's true.
That's factually inaccurate and often accompanied by racial stereotypes. It's important to note that 80% of the people who received SNAP benefits were working the year before or the year after getting SNAP food stamps benefits. The minimum wage in America now, full-time work equals about $13,000 a year. So if you're working full-time, you're usually poor and often hungry. The vast majority of people who are hungry in America are children, senior citizens, people with disabilities, veterans, and the working poor. So it's really just nothing more than a right-wing myth that people are lazy and don't want to work. And many are working in one or two or three jobs. They're just paid garbage.
That's unbelievable, right? How hard they work. And yet they can't make meat. And all of us that live in the New York area know how expensive it is. It's, you know,
I don't get on a subway very often at 5 a.m., but when I do, if I have to catch an early train usually or have a very early meeting or event or interview somewhere, the train is coming out of Brooklyn into Manhattan is full of working people, usually in uniforms, a construction uniform, a maintenance uniform, a nursing uniform. Coming from where I live in Brooklyn, the stops before where I live, frankly, are mostly non-white, so this sort of racial stereotype that, well, it's non-white people and they just don't want to work. Again, it's just a myth. And this other thing, liberals just and poor people just aren't religious enough. Well, many of those people are riding to work reading a New Testament, a Torah, or a Quran. So that's another crock explanation of this as well, that they just don't have good enough moral fiber. They're not religious. Poor people, the most religious people in America. They're working 6 or 7 days a week and praying the seventh day. Again, they're not hungry because they're lazy. They're hungry because they don't earn enough. And if I push back against the conservatives, I must also gently push back against some of my foodie liberal friends who think the problem is they just don't shop well enough. They're just too ignorant about healthy food. If they only cooked all their food from scratch and grew all their own food in their own, you know, rooftop garden, then they wouldn't be hungry. And you'd be surprised how many, you know, people think of themselves as progressive, say stuff like that if they're upper middle class. And that's just missing the boat, too. People don't have the time. They don't have the land. They're working two or three jobs. They're mostly living in places where there isn't a 12 months out of the year growing season, and I happen to like eating all 12 months out of the year. So there are a lot of misconceptions on all sides of the political spectrum about why we have hunger.
There's been a lot of coverage lately on the child nutrition reauthorization bill. I know, every 5 years that they
theoretically, if they're doing their job, but in Washington, that's a big if these days.
Right, right. It keeps getting postponed. Can you explain to some of my listeners what the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill is and how it affects our children and their hunger?
It is a horribly wonkish title for an absolutely vital bill. Basically, this is a bill that covers every dollar spent on the Women's Infants and Children Program, the WIC program, that gives nutritional assistance to pregnant women and children under five. It governs how much money goes into the school lunch program, the school breakfast program, summer meals for kids, and after-school snacks for kids. And it basically determines how many kids get those programs and how much nonprofit groups and school districts are reimbursed for serving those meals and also what the nutritional quality of those meals are. And we're talking about tens of millions of American children every day that depend on this food. So, you know, Washington sometimes obsesses on one or two big issues, and the media sometimes obsesses on one or two issues. This bill rarely gets much media attention, and yet it determines what tens of millions of our young people are going to be eating on a daily basis. So it's absolutely vital. And our push is to get this bill to fully fund school meals and fully fund WIC to make sure people can get healthier food for their kids at school and at home, and make sure that we fund it. And every time I hear, oh, we don't have the money to fund this, I'll point out that the new war on ISIS in just this year, with no real congressional debate, was given $64 billion extra dollars. The entire federal funding on summer meals for kids is about $500 million. So for 1 year of a new undeclared war, we're spending 128 years worth of summer meals for hungry American kids.
Wow. When you put in that
perspective. Have I depressed everyone enough this morning? Enjoy your Cheerios. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, that's just unbelievable. You know, I have been, or years ago, you know, when I first had my first child, you know, I was a single mom, and I found myself, you know, on food stamps and on WIC, and I, you know that it was a lifesaver for me at that time. You know, I wouldn't have made it without it. And, you know, and for me, it certainly was not going to be my way of life, but it was the bridge that helped me get through that period until I could get back on my feet and, you know, get a job and get myself working. And it was just, you know, a lifesaver. And I know how important those programs are and how vital they are to those that need them. And I know, you know, I live in a upper middle class area now. And, you know, when I talk about the Child Nutrition Act, you know, most people say, well, you know, school meal programs aren't good anyway, so just send my kid with lunch. And they don't have any realization that for so many households, that's not an option. There is no food at home to pack a lunch. There's no other option. And so, you know, I really also want to just encourage the food programs to be serving better food and healthier food, because for so many kids, this is the only food they get. And so it has to be nutritious and not just full of sugar and fat and, you know.
Absolutely. And the last child nutrition bill, championed by the First Lady, Michelle Obama, did improve the nutritional guidelines of schools. Now, I was critical of that because the money came out of the SNAP program. So they robbed Peter to pay Paul, but we absolutely need to fund healthier meals. And your story is so typical.
Right.
Half the Americans born
right.
in America
and, you know,
today.
I certainly was not lazy, and I certainly was not, you know, not wanting to work. It just, you know, was the circumstances at the time. And, you know, and I feel like that, you know, informs my ability to be able to talk to people, you know. And
I guarantee over a course of a lifetime, you've paid far, far, far more in taxes than you have taken out in benefits.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And that is typical of Americans. It's only poor people's programs that is defined by the society as somehow bad. You know, everyone, even you don't hear the Tea Party calling for elimination of unemployment insurance, and it's because it's seen as insurance. You pay in when you're working, and when you're not, you get money out. But that's exactly what the SNAP, the food stamp program, is. You pay your taxes when you're doing better, and when you're doing worse, you get a little food help, a little food unemployment compensation. The wealthiest people in this country get a mortgage interest deduction, not only for their home, but for their second home. And then the right says, well, that's a tax relief. That's not a government subsidy or payout. That's bunk. You
right.
know, and they always say, oh, this should be like your family budget. Well, your family budget, if whether you earn a dollar less or spend a dollar more, either way, that's one less dollar you have. And same with the federal budget. A dollar spent on a social program is exactly the same 100 pennies as a dollar not collected because it was given as a tax cut to the rich. So the way we define tax cuts for the rich somehow, not as government spending, but God forbid someone loses their job, or God forbid a kid's born to a hungry family and they need some extra benefits, when, oh my God, we go nuts over that.
Right, right. I know I was reading an article this weekend in the Times talking about the loopholes for all the tax savings that the 400 wealthiest families in this country do. And I think the one family saved in taxes $4.5 billion in taxes they didn't pay because they hired their own lobbyist. And I mean, it's just absurd, the amount of money. But going back to the school food programs, I know Michelle Obama had really improved, you know, fought for improvement, but my understanding is the lobbying from the frozen pizza companies and the frozen French fry companies, they turned it around and they...
Well, not quite. There were a few tweaks that USDA made that I think were very, you know, common sense based on just trying to balance kids eating it, and the science keeps changing. But the basic change in the law, the basic improvements, is still federal law. It's the schools are still required to serve healthier, lower fat food with more real nutrients. There's still essentially a ban on what used to be called competitive food, when you know, the Burger Kings and KFCs of the world could come in and sort of compete with the school meals program by selling that food. So most of that was maintained, and the food industry tried mightily to change that, but for now we have beaten back their attempt to do so. And I think it's fair to say, as long as this president and first lady are in the White House, the president would be likely to veto any significant watering down of that. Now, if there's a President Cruz, then, you know, all bets are off.
Change. It's a scary thought.
We don't take, we are a nonpartisan group, and we don't take sides in elections. But that being said, I hope all your listeners really educate themselves on how the candidates really stand on these issues, and not just hunger, but the poverty that undergirds hunger. And they may say they're going to do something about, but see if their records add up, and examine whether the things they stood for in the past have actually increased hunger and poverty. And so if they have a lifelong record of increasing hunger and poverty, you may not want to believe them now when they say, gee, I really care.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's actually a website where you can see how different politicians have voted their, you know, their food rights and where they stand on food issues. And I'll share that with everyone this week in my newsletter. Also, let's talk about school breakfast. I know New York City for the first time has rolled out breakfast in the classroom for all qualifying public elementary schools in the city.
Nationwide,
I know that
breakfast
a big
is a
push
real
to even do free meals for all school children. Can you talk to us a little bit about the breakfast program and why free lunch for everybody would be such a wonderful thing?
Yeah, nationwide, half the kids in America who get lunch don't get breakfast. And there are a lot of logistical reasons. There are a lot of stigma reasons. And in New York City, it's even worse. About two-thirds of the kids who get lunch don't get breakfast, even though arguably breakfast is the most important meal of the day nutritionally, in terms of the energy you need to be able to function in the school day. And so we know that the best way to address that problem is to have universal in-classroom school breakfast. And what does that mean? It means when the kid shows up in the first period classroom, they get their breakfast there. Regardless of their family income, they get their breakfast there. It's cheap. It's nutritious. You make sure everyone eats. You get kids. Kids are more likely to come on time because of that. And the reason we need to make it universal is this country is spending billions of dollars to collect forms from kids to say whether their families are very poor and deserve free breakfasts, are sort of kind of poor and get reduced price breakfast, or aren't exactly poor. They may be lower middle class and just a penny above the guidelines and have to pay so-called full price breakfast. So we spend far more on the form collection than I believe we save in having these differential levels. It creates more stigma, more paperwork and hassle. So we just say, you know, school lunch and school breakfast, goodness, let's make it free for every kid in America. You know, I went to a suburban high school and played JV soccer, junior varsity soccer, and I was extraordinarily mediocre. By now, it won't shock your listeners to know I was better on the debate team than I was on the soccer team. I spent a lot of the season on the bench, and yet my district gave me a free jersey because they decided that was an important part of the educational experience. Well, for goodness sakes, if we think sports jerseys for mediocre athletes are a vital part of the school experience, why don't we understand that good school nutrition is?
Right, right. So true. Well, the work you're doing at the, you know, the coalition is so important. Can you share with us a little bit more about some of the work that you're doing and how that is changing the game plan?
Well, I do want to let your listeners know, if they're hungry or if anyone else is hungry, we do run a thing called the National Hunger Clearinghouse on behalf of USDA, and anyone can dial up 1-866-3-HUNGRY. That's 1-866-3-HUNGRY, and find out information in all 50 states about where you can get food help, or someone you know might be able to get food help. We can send people to local pantries and kitchens, help them get food stamps, SNAP benefits, etc. Another thing I want to plug is we have a spanking new website called hungervolunteer.org at www.hungervolunteer.org, and we give all Americans and all New Yorkers a better idea of how they can be more effective in volunteering to fight hunger. It's great when people show up at Thanksgiving and Christmas and work at a pantry and kitchen.
Right, but people are hungry all year long.
That's right, and people can feel even better about themselves using their professional skills. Look, if you're a professional accountant, at an agency that needs professional accounting work, just packing a pantry bag that an eighth grader is doing makes as little sense as if you ran a basketball team and LeBron James worked for you and his only job was changing the light bulbs in the locker room. And so we really want to encourage people to use their professional skills. You know, if you're an accountant, you know, 5 hours of mentoring an agency on accounting would be worth 5 years of stuffing pantry bags. And most importantly, we want people to engage in public policy advocacy. We want people to contact their members of Congress. For instance, right now they can call 202-224-3121 and get their senators and congressmen, that's the Capitol switchboard, and tell them to pass a child nutrition bill that ends child hunger in America. So we do advocacy, we do volunteer placement and recruitment, we help people access SNAP benefits, we run a community-supported agriculture program where we bring fresh regional produce into low-income neighborhoods and make it affordable for low-income people. So we really have a comprehensive plan to fight hunger in America, but it's got to start with raising wages and ensuring an adequate safety net.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Now, you also have a book coming out, don't you?
I do have a book coming out. I wrote a book 6 years ago called All We Can Eat, How Hungry Is America, about hunger in America, and I'm writing a book now called, at least the working title, is America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. And so it's a parody of self-help books. And each chapter is going to be about a different self-help cliche, if you will. One's America, I love you, but I'm not in love with you anymore. We need to break up. Another is why buy the politician when you can get the milk for free. Others, Republicans are from Mars, Democrats are from Venus. And basically, I'm going to talk about how there really is a relationship that needs to be healed, and that's the relationship of the American people to our government and our society. And basically challenge everyone to take more personal responsibility for fixing our country. Basically saying it's just a cop-out if you say, oh, I'm not going to get involved because the system's broken or these politicians stink. Respect anyone says this, that's just a cop-out. If our forefathers and foremothers have that attitude and refuse to fight in the Revolutionary War, refuse to end slavery, refuse to stand up to allow women the right to vote, refuse to march over the Edmund Pettus Bridge, refuse to fight at Normandy, we wouldn't have any of the progress we have in America today. So that's the main theme of my book. It's meant to be comedic. I guess if I had to put a stereotypical description of it, it's trying to be sort of like a written equivalent of a Michael Moore movie, but trying to use humor to address some deadly serious topics.
Well, that's
so stay tuned. It's coming out
in
November.
It's really amazing because it's not very funny, but it's really wonderful. You know, I had someone on a couple of weeks ago, Robert Clancy, talking about volunteerism. I mean, we all can make that time to help out our fellow community people, and we all need to do it. If everyone gives a little, it will get the job done. So, Joel, thank you so much for joining me. I'm glad you finally found us.
Sorry about that, but I was so honored to be on, and thank you so much for having me on, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
You're welcome. And everybody
else, you can find out more at nyccah.org, just how to get in that plug.
Okay, and I'm going to actually get all that information, all the stuff that you were giving, the phone numbers and the websites, and I'll get that from you and put it up on my website, okay, so everyone can see it. And
okay.
Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.